And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday, May 12th. Currently 56 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. We've got 64 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. Here's a look at your forecast for your Monday across the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at lots of sunshine as we go throughout your Monday, but watch out for those gusty winds. We're going to see winds gusting out of the south anywhere between 20 to 45 miles per hour, with some higher gusts possible in some locations. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the low 70s. Heber Valley, we're looking at those highs climbing into the lower 80s across the area. Now, as we go into your Tuesday, get ready for some big changes. We've got a storm system that's going to be moving in, bringing us a big drop in those temperatures and increasing the chances of precipitation across the area. We'll start off our Tuesday with overnight lows in the upper 30s and low 40s. As we go throughout your Tuesday afternoon, look for increasing clouds with a chance of scattered showers developing throughout the afternoon and evening hours. Highs will be in the mid 50s for Park City. We'll see those highs right around 60 in the Heber Valley. And look at this as we continue on into your Wednesday. Much colder air pours into the area. We're looking at overnight lows by Wednesday morning down near freezing. And yes, we could have a couple of scattered showers and rumbles throughout your Wednesday, but we could also have a couple of high mountain snow showers potentially as we go into your Wednesday afternoon. Highs on Wednesday will only be into the mid to upper 40s in the Park City area, with highs in the mid 50s there for the Heber Valley. Beyond Wednesday, we start to dry things out for your Thursday with partly cloudy skies. High temperatures will be into the mid 50s in Park City. We'll look at those highs in the low 60s for the Heber Valley. And then for the end of the week, we'll warm it back up to near 60 in Park City, with highs in the mid to upper 60s in the Heber Valley with partly cloudy skies. As we move into this weekend, another storm system will approach the area, bringing us another chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms across the region. Highs will be in the upper 50s there in Park City. Highs will be in the mid 60s in the Heber Valley. We'll start to cool it down again with highs near 50 on Sunday in Park City, with highs only in the upper 50s for the Heber Valley. Overall, we've got some ups and downs to the forecast, but windy and warm for the rest of your Monday. From ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, in just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant with an update on federal funding and tick season. The founder of the union, Reed Galen, talks about a virtual community conversation happening on Wednesday to explore what it means to stand up for democratic values and inspire civic courage ahead of the 2026 election. And finally, Summit County Behavioral Health Director Aaron Newman will be joined by new Mental Wellness Alliance Director Anna Frackow with details on events being planned for Mental Health Awareness Month, which happened throughout the month of May. Well, the Snyderville Basin's first public cemetery has hit local opposition in its final stretch. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the Utah Olympic Park is one of the critics of the gravesite planned at its front door.
The Snyderville Basin Cemetery District announced in June 2024 its preferred site is across from the Runnemuck Dog Park. Now that's receiving public pushback, including from the Utah Olympic Park. It would be on the right side of Olympic Parkway, about a third of the way up the road from the roundabout, below the RTS trailhead. Cemetery board members have been fine-tuning the location with Basin Recreation because it may require shifting summer and winter trails. Nordic Combined Olympian Billy DeMong says the bigger issue is that the Olympics are returning in 2034.
And with that top of mind, I think that this location doesn't send the message that I would like to, and I think a lot of our Olympic community would like to send, in welcoming the world back to Park City, Utah, and Summit County in the basin, and specifically the Utah Olympic Park.
Cemeteries are already allowed on the land the cemetery district hopes to use, but state lawmakers want cemeteries to be separate parcels of land, so it has to be subdivided. The problem is that the land's deed bans subdivision. Undoing that requires signatures from 13 individuals or organizations with a legal vested interest in the overall property. Chair Max Greenhall says the cemetery board has 11 of the 13. The last two are High Valley Transit and Basin Recreation. Basin Rec's board decided to take public input May 9th and will determine whether to sign at its next meeting. Legally speaking, the UOP does not have a say in the subdivision, but it wants the recreation district to think twice. Employees, Olympians, and other athletes spoke out against the cemetery at the board meeting. UOP President and CEO Colin Hilton says he's heard from athletes, especially in luge, who say they don't want to be reminded of a potentially fatal outcome when they go to train. Greenhall indicated that the area's natural beauty is one reason it's a good spot for a final resting place. He compares it to St. Mary's Catholic Church, which he says harmoniously fits in with surrounding trails.
It's that wonderful building surrounded by recreation that gives the community and visitors notice that we're more than just recreation, that we have a spiritual component to our community.
Hilton says he was unaware of the preferred site until November of 2024. He says the first time the cemetery district emailed him was January 2025, inviting him to be on its advisory board. Talks between the two broke down in a matter of weeks. Cemetery officials say the UOP has been intransigent and does not want them to use Olympic Parkway as an access point. Hilton has suggested other locations on the same parcel by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints camp or off Tech Center Drive. Basin Rec has suggested the cemetery move closer to the roundabout, which cemetery board member Pete Gilwald says could work. They've already moved it down the road because the recreation district was worried about a natural spring. Gilwald says Hilton's suggestions also come with potential issues. The area near the church camp requires negotiating with the church and is in close proximity to a well. The spot off Tech Center Drive requires negotiating access across Dakota Pacific Real Estate's development, which is in limbo, and across Basin Rec's paved trail. Hilton says he sent a final email to the cemetery board February 13th and never received a response. Laura Anthony with the Mountain Trails Foundation says her nonprofit won't support the cemetery board until it meets their view of transparency. She says that means written, publicly shared, and approved plans, including plans to pay for and replace disrupted trails, install a cemetery-specific parking lot, and ensure the natural character of the open space remains. Another resident, Charles Butler, echoes that it's tough to imagine what the cemetery would actually look like. Here's what cemetery board members have described so far. A park-like, unpaved space without any buildings, mausoleums, chapels, or tall structures. Headstones would be low to the ground or embedded in the ground, and if there's fencing, it will mimic the fences Basin Rec has at its trailheads. Gilwald says it's tough to draw specific plans until the board knows where the cemetery will go. The board also takes issue with the suggestion it's not been transparent. The Summit County Council formed it 2 years ago, and the board has been meeting in public ever since. It surveyed residents more than 1 year ago about what they want a cemetery to look like. Gilwald says between 80 and 90 people responded. He says they looked at more than 20 locations. It's been a volunteer process involving pro bono work. Reasons other locations were scrapped ranged from concerns over soil quality to water quality to physical access. The cemetery district says it's prioritizing county-owned land to make the process cheaper for taxpayers. If push comes to shove, Gilwald says they could move closer to the Olympic Roundabout, for instance. He says another meeting is scheduled with Basin Rec soon. If the district agrees to subdivide the land, it's not an approval of the specific cemetery location. County Attorney Dave Thomas says the actual site would need to go before the Recreation District and the County Council again for approval in public meetings because the two entities still jointly own the property. The Snyderville Basin does not have a public cemetery, and Park Cities is near capacity. That means residents can't be buried near their homes, often choosing a final resting place in the Salt Lake Valley. Basin Recreation, Mountain Trails Foundation, and the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation are financial supporters of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
It's tick season. Let's start there. I've seen some online posts from folks saying that they've come home with a tick every time they go out for a walk. So just ticks everywhere?
Yeah, it's that time of year. Just like we enjoy being out with the warmer weather and the sunshine, so do those little critters that cause us a little bit of stress and strife. And one of those is ticks. And I've also been out and about this year enjoying the warmer weather, and I've had ticks on myself. Fortunately, I haven't had a bite yet, but it's really important that we're aware, not only for ourselves, but for those kids in our lives, those little ones that may not be aware, that tend to find themselves out playing, running through the sagebrush. And, you know, those ticks, that's their life cycle. They're looking for something to be able to have a bite and take a blood meal so that they can go through their life cycle. And unfortunately, when we come into contact with them, we tend to fit the bill. So we encourage everyone that if you've been outside, regardless of if you're in ankle-deep grass or you're in hip-deep sagebrush, when you get home, before you shower, before you clean up, take a few minutes, look yourself over, look yourself in those More sensitive areas, look over your little ones in those sensitive areas just to make sure that you don't have a tick that has latched on. Obviously, if the tick hasn't, you're going to remove it and just dispose of it as you would any other insect. And then if you do have a bite, make sure that you remove it properly. In most cases, a tick has to be latched on for 24 hours at minimum before it can cause illness. And so if you've been out in the morning for a hike or a mountain bike ride, you come back that afternoon after having lunch, hop in the shower, and you notice a tick, as long as that tick is removed within that 24-hour time frame, generally speaking, the chance of becoming ill from it is very, very small. But of course, we encourage anyone that has a tick bite to monitor that area for that traditional bullseye look that's associated with Lyme disease. In my family, we enjoy being outdoors, and we have had tick bites, myself included, in past years. And I like to take a Sharpie and draw a circle around it just so that we can monitor that irritation and that redness to make sure it's not spreading beyond what you would normally see with any insect bite. And then, of course, if you feel that there has something isn't right as a result of that bite, we always encourage you to immediately seek medical help from your primary care physician.
Yeah, so how do you remove it properly?
There's a number of online tutorials. There's some of the more traditional ways, the urban myths, I guess you could say, but the most effective way is simply with a pair of tweezers and light pressure. The most important part about removing a tick, if it has bit you, is to make sure you get the head and mouth parts. And there's a lot of information online. We have a very low incidence of Lyme disease here in the West, especially in Summit County, but the risk is still present. There's other tick-borne diseases that we can suffer from, but given what the East Coast deals with around Lyme disease and the abundance of ticks, there are a lot of online resources on how to properly remove a tick. And then, of course, if you're not comfortable doing that, or if it's in an area where you can't really get to it and ensure that you get a clean removal, again, seek that medical help.
Yeah, so can you feel it, or is it something you really have to see?
You know, what's interesting is I've had a couple ticks this year being out and about, and I didn't feel any of them. But I came home, and as I was getting ready to hop in the shower, I noticed them, and it gives you a little bit of the creeps, and the hair stands up on the back of your neck. But, you know, we always encourage people to be outside and be active, and if you're going to do that, there's that risk. But that risk of having a tick bite does not outweigh the benefits, the mental health, the physical health benefits of being outside, enjoying our trails, getting the blood pumping and stretching the legs. So just be careful, especially with our children. They generally don't know what it looks like or what it means. And so if you take those precautions and are proactive about it, the risk is very low.
Yeah, so you're looking for a small dark spot.
Yeah, if you have a tick bite, you'll be able to tell. It's not one of those things that is hard to miss once that little nasty critter has latched itself onto you.
And once attached, they don't just drop off.
They will after about 24 hours once they've consumed their blood meal and got the proteins that they need, yeah.
Okay. And then what about ticks on pets? Is that a problem?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not too versed in that aspect, but I know our veterinary professionals around the area definitely are. And so I would encourage, if you have pets that you're out roaming with and there's ticks are a concern for you and your pets, to reach out to those veterinary professionals.
Yeah, now are some years worse than others for the number of ticks out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what's interesting is the years that are really wet, we haven't seen the number of ticks. And I think that there's obviously a certain balance between moisture and dryness in the habitat. Not this year, but last year seemed extremely bad. We were receiving lots of reports and calls to the department about ticks. Kids coming home from school with ticks, from their walk home, people getting ticks on mountain bike rides and on hikes. And while we still continue to receive those calls, they don't seem to be as numerable as they were last year. So yeah, I do think there's a cyclical nature to it, but nonetheless, the presence of ticks is always here inside of our area.
Okay, it's spring runoff time, and that means that the health department starts testing well water. Why?
Yeah, you know, with that runoff and the change in the landscape, we always want individuals on individual wells to recognize that it's important for them to understand what's going on with their water that they're drinking, that they're showering in, that they're giving their family. And while it's not required in Summit County to have your individual well tested, if you are interested in that, we offer that. We do sample all of our public water systems, those that are on a water system that they pay a monthly bill to. They are required by state rule to sample those, and the health department assists in that process. But there's no such requirement for individual well owners. And with that runoff, you can have concerns of surface runoff, chemicals, more natural influences or contaminants to your water. And so if it's been a minute since you've done that and you're interested, we absolutely can help with that. If you are looking for a bacterial sample, it's about, it is a $27 fee. And if you're looking to evaluate the nitrates in your water or if there's a presence of nitrates, that's $30. It's a quick turnaround. It's just right here in Colville. Our environmental health scientists and are fully trained. Our lab is vetted. It's it complies with all the state rules, and we're able to provide some real in-depth analysis and information to those interested.
Okay, so it's not that you go out and test wells. It's if somebody wants it. So it could depend on how many you actually test each season.
Right. We're testing those public water systems monthly at multiple different areas. But this is the individual homeowner that is on a well. And if they're interested in that, we have the sample bottles for free. You just come and grab a sample bottle, talk to one of our staff. They'll tell you how to collect that sample, return it back to our Colville office, and then our professionals there in Colville will analyze it through our lab equipment and get you the results quickly.
Okay, so bacterial, I understand, but what kind of bacteria would you be looking for?
Well, there's coliform bacteria, which is an indicator that there's some type of surface or bacterial influence in the water. So there's it's generally referred to as coliform, but we're also looking for E. coli to see if there's any influence from warm blooded animals that ran off of the surface. And then nitrates are generally associated with fertilizers and those types of things in the agricultural industry. And while those are necessary to grow crops that we benefit from, they do have the opportunity or the potential to contaminate a water source. And we want to make sure that people are aware of what they're drinking. You know, most well owners are very versed in this and understand this, but we do have some people that have moved in that are on a well and may not be aware of the procedures and the upkeep of a well. And so if they have questions in general about a well, but most importantly about these nitrates, coliform, and E. coli, we're happy to help, and they can reach out to our team in the Colville area.
Okay. Sun safety. Let's talk about the fact that sun is high in the sky and out for about, 15 hours every day, huh?
Yeah, I saw a post the other day from one of the local meteorologists that for the next 90 days, the sun won't set until after 8:30, which is a wonderful thing. But with that comes the opportunity, just like we talked about with ticks, you're out in the sun, you're out doing those things, whether you're at ball games or out at the lake or whatever it is, the sun as warm and as comforting as it can be also presents some risk. And Summit County has the second highest rate in the state, and a rate that's more than double the national average of melanoma incidence. And so that the sun is one of those things where whether you're there 15 minutes or an hour, there is an exposure element. And so we encourage sunscreen, we encourage covering up. If you're not an individual that likes sunscreen, that's who I am. I don't prefer to have sunscreen on. I don't like the greasiness of it, but I do cover up and make sure that there's, you know, with the technologies that are available, there's a lot of lightweight clothing now that it doesn't present the heat factor, so you can wear that and cover up. And we just encourage people to be aware that melanoma, especially at our elevation, is there's an increased risk of that. We see a rate that's 2 times the national average for melanoma. And then of course annual dermatology visits can also help with that. And we do have an event coming up later this year in September where we've partnered with a national agency to provide free melanoma screenings inside of their skin bus. And we'll have more information on that as we get closer to the end of the year. But we're looking at a big cancer event related to HPV, skin cancer, breast cancer, and really creating just an opportunity to allow people to come in and receive free exams, get rid of those barriers around time and placement and location and cost. And melanoma is definitely one of those concerns we have.
Yeah. And what does somebody look for? I mean, with melanoma, we can see the ticks, but can you see melanoma? Sometimes it's in places you just can't see. Are there symptoms to be aware of? Or?
Yeah, you know, I'm not too read up on the whole melanoma thing. I know personally in our family, we've lost individuals, young individuals to melanoma that no symptoms, no signs, just all of a sudden really terrible diagnosis late in the cancer stages. Someone that's in my own age bracket in their mid-40s. And So it is, I don't know if you could call it a silent killer, but it is definitely one of those things that, unlike a tick, you just don't know when and where. And that's why we're lucky in this country to have such trained and highly trained professionals in dermatology that are able to recognize those things early on. And so if you have concerns, questions about that, we'd encourage you to seek out professional help. If you don't have those resources, then we're going to make it available to you in September. We're last year, great turnout. And if I recall correctly, the numbers were given to me, but I think they had roughly around 30 to 35 concerning spots removed during these visits of individuals, some of which were found to be cancer. So life-changing things that a simple 25, 30-minute visit can do for you.
Okay, let's move on to funding impacts. So many of your staff positions are funded by federal grants. So are you being impacted at this point?
Absolutely. The entire public health network across our nation, and could be argued internationally, is being impacted by some of the decisions around trying to be more efficient. That trickle-down effect has now made it to the local level. The current administration has released a budget that shows roughly about a 40% cut to the public health system. Some of the programs that we have traditionally held are being completely zeroed out. Some are feeling the impacts of it, and others are being held harmless. And, you know, we've set or established our priorities in the health department with the support of our Board of Health, with the support of County Manager and Deputy County Manager Shane Scott and Jenna Young, and, of course, the council. And our priorities are first and foremost people, communicating to our people the transparency issue of what information we do know. We're going to always put our resources towards minimum performance standards, making sure we're meeting the bare essentials or fundamentals of public health. We want to have a real financial understanding of exactly what's taking place. But most importantly, and this is something that when we've lost the first tranche of funding around the remaining COVID funds, is we're going to create our own runway. And in the past, we have not had an opportunity to do that. We found out on a Wednesday that the previous Monday the funding had been removed. But this time, in our game plan, we're going to create a runway that allows us to make really solid decisions based on information once we have it. And we'll have a 30-day grace period, whatever time it takes. The council and Shane are committed to that, making sure that the decisions that are made protect this community, continue the rich tradition of public health, the rich tradition of community health, and that as we learn more and have more information, the decisions we make are rooted in accomplishing those fundamental public health practices, but also what is it that this community needs and where can we have the greatest impact on our community.
Yeah, so at this point you don't know whether or not you need to cut programs or lay anybody off?
Yeah, in public health, and Leslie, you and I have talked about this in the past, we're not strangers to the idea of funding cuts, mm-hmm. right? We understand that year over year, priorities change, initiatives change. But in those instances where we've had funding removed, we have a lead-up time. We're told a couple months in advance, or maybe even a half a year in advance. We're given a date of when the cut is going to happen, and so we can plan, we can shift people around, we can change our priorities to meet the funding priorities. This case is a little different. We have not had any of that lead-in time. All of the information that's being communicated to us at the local level and the state level comes by way generally of the same information that everybody else is learning through executive orders, through the news. And so here we are waiting for a July 1st date, which is generally when we know what our funding looks like for the next fiscal year, middle of May, and we still have not heard anything about what the future holds for our programming, other than there's a 40% cut to NIH, which definitely affects all of our programs, CDC, FDA, those programs that we rely on to help with federal funding here at the local level.
Yeah, so are you, I mean, we're halfway, just about halfway through the year's budget. You're okay going forward, or you don't know that yet?
We're okay until June 30th.
Okay.
But after July 1st is where the rubber really hits the road. We don't know what that looks like. Like I said, projections are around 40%, and when we look at the federal element, or the grants of our current budget after July 1, 40% would be devastating for us. It's catastrophic. And we would not be immune to some of the practices that have been held at the federal level of letting people go. That's to the tune of roughly, $1.1 to $1.2 million shortfall out of our budget, which roughly $700,000 is salaries. And that is not a small task to try and overcome. However, we remain committed to our people. We remain committed to this community and making sure that in the event we do have to make some really, really tough decisions for the people that we love inside of our office, we're going to do our best to take care of them. And the council's committed to that. The Board of Health is committed to that. Our leadership in the county, myself and leadership at the health department is absolutely committed to taking care of those people that have done such a wonderful job here in Summit County.
Okay, finally, I just wanted to ask you quickly about the community health assessment. It's complete. Now what?
Yeah, an absolute success, community health assessment, over 1,700 responses. From that, it is statistically viable. We're able to draw some really strong conclusions and make connections here in the community. And now we have the pleasure of jumping into the community health improvement plan. Using that information, we're able to engage stakeholders, bring a group together, build a plan through a two-day retreat-style event that is really going to drive the future of the health department. And I'm excited. I'm excited that we get to deal in this way, that we hear from individuals about what's important to them through the community health assessment. I'm excited we get to hear from our stakeholders about how they want to use those data to influence our decisions moving forward. And then I'm excited for the staff to be able to receive that input, that direction, build a plan that is not only solid in nature, but also is actionable, and then really connect that to our public health accreditation efforts and really see the success of the Summit County Health Department in the next 5 years. It's exciting times.
When does that two-day retreat happen?
That, as you can imagine, trying to grab stakeholders and staff and everybody else on the same day, but it will be in early June. We're still trying to figure out those dates, but invites will be going out hopefully by the end of the week.
And that's when the results will be released publicly?
The results are available on the website. You're welcome to give me a call, reach out to me, our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter. We have QR codes posted all over the county where you can download that electronically. We're happy to give you a paper copy as well. Community health assessment is ready, but in late July, you'll see the community health assessment and the CHIP presented to our council and council of governments on our findings and what our plan is moving forward.
Okay, Phil, going to leave it there. We'll see you next month. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Leslie.
That's Phil Bondurant again, the director of the Summit County Health Department. On Wednesday, the union, a nonprofit independent action coalition of civically engaged volunteers committed to restoring the foundational principles of American democracy, hosting a virtual community conversation. Participating in that is the founder of the union and Park City resident, Reed Galen. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me back.
So give us more information about the union. What is it, and what do you do?
Yeah, sure. So first and foremost, you know, it is something that developed out of, I spent most of my life, if not all my life, in politics, Leslie. And I was previously a Republican. I've worked alongside Democrats. I'm an independent. And what I saw after traveling the country last fall was that the thing that is missing from, I mean, there are many things, but the thing that I noticed that's really missing from the small d democratic process right now is just how many people are tuned out, not because they're not informed. Anybody I met, you know, in all the states I went to and all the towns I walked around, everybody's very informed about what the stakes were, what's going on in the world. Too many of them just decided that the democratic process didn't have anything for them. And I think a lot of that began from the idea that they had been disconnected. Look, it could have been a lot of things, social, cultural, economic, could have been COVID, whatever it was. But what I found was that there were too many people who, one, just were happy to see people at their door, right? That's how sort of lonely they were. But secondly, that they were cut off from their own communities. And I think that's one thing at the union that we're trying to do, which is just to get community members together, largely apolitically. Come eat pizza, come have a beer, right? Encourage them to get involved in whatever it is, wherever it is. It could be, you know, volunteering down at the library. It could be coaching a team, whatever the case might be. But for us, it's really important to get people out and together in person.
So you were a co-founder of the Lincoln Project, now right, founding the union. So how are they different?
Well, the Lincoln Project was very much based on the idea of hard-hitting attack ads, specifically as related to Donald Trump in the 2020 and 2024 elections. That is a very specific role to play from a, you know, from a sort of former Republican perspective. This is much more of a grassroots effort. This is much more of an opportunity to say, like, we have to get back to the basics of what civic life is in this country. I mean, last year in 2024, Leslie, 71% of races went unopposed. That means that only 29% of the races in this country did the person running have an opponent. That is not democracy. That is a populace and a voter base that has decided that too often, 7 out of 10 times, it doesn't matter whether or not they have anybody to vote for. And of course, that contributes to low voter turnout, that contributes to apathy. And of course, it also contributes to, as we've seen in states like Utah, where people don't worry about, you know, competition, so they worry less about what it is they do when they get to work.
Yeah. On the website, you say we need to rebuild our democracy. So has democracy fallen apart?
Well, I would say this is, from my perspective, it is certainly, if it hasn't fallen apart, it's certainly very sick. And I think that, again, what we see now is if you do not believe that democracy has an opportunity to make your life better, if the social compact that we are supposed to have as citizens, remember, the whole idea of democracy is that the people are ultimately sovereign. That's completely out of whack at this point, right? If you have people who, again, do not worry about their reelection campaigns, are going up to whether or not it's Capitol Hill in Salt Lake City or Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and clearly not doing the work that's in the best interest of their constituents, then democracy isn't working. It's just a system, right? Democracy has to be more than the idea of, well, we have elections every 2 years, right? People run for office, people get elected, people go to those jobs. Okay, like, that's logistics. That's not democracy. That's a process. That's not democracy. And so from our perspective, we have to ask ourselves, what does it mean? That's one thing that I think is a really important question. What does it mean? Because it can mean so many things. But I'll tell you this, we really believed in 2024 that as a message that would work, and it didn't. You know why? Because not enough people either A, know what it means, or B, they saw what it means and it wasn't working for them.
Right. And I guess, so what is the goal of this organization?
Right. So for us, it's really a couple of things. One is in 2025 is, again, to start to go and do these community conversations like we're doing Wednesday night at the Jim Santee Auditorium. I'm going to be in Boise Friday night for another one. And so the idea is, again, to get people out. I was in Florida about 6 weeks ago. Get people out who have not been civically engaged. Get them out telling their stories, asking questions about how they can get further involved. Again, that could be politically, that could be just in their own community, their own town, their own neighborhoods. But what we want to do is build up that foundation of interested individuals who maybe have been disaffected or disengaged because of the ugliness we've seen in the American political process, but want to get involved and want to get involved in a positive way.
So it is a nonpartisan group?
We are nonpartisan, yeah. I am an independent. I've been an independent for, gosh, going on 10 years now. We have no litmus tests, right? We have no checklists. We have no tests you have to pass in order to join. If you want to get involved, we want to have you.
So tell me about this upcoming community conversation. I had heard it's going to be both virtual and in person?
Correct, yeah. So we'll live stream it. But yeah, it'll be at the library Wednesday evening. Doors open at 6 p.m. You can go to our website, jointheunion.us. We've still got tickets available. My guest will be Adam Kinzinger, former member of Congress from Illinois, who was a Republican, member of the January 6th Commission, former Air Force pilot, and now also another independent trying to figure out his way in the world as it is.
And what's his message going to be?
You know, I think that's the one thing that we want to find out is, you know, he's been through the worst of it. From a lot of different perspectives, right? It's like so many of us, you know, to do what Adam did took a lot of courage because he had to give up everything he knew. He had to give up his party. He had to give up his career. He and his family have had to move because they've been the subject of threats, numerous threats. Everything he knew was something that he had to give up. And so now that's the question, you know, the conversation I want to have, and we will offer Q&A as well, is like, what does he see as someone who has been on the front lines of this battle for years? What does he see as the path forward?
Yeah. So he'll be virtual?
No, he'll be here in person. He'll be here in town, yeah.
Great. Your other guest is Park City local and U.S. Senate candidate Caroline Gleick. Any idea what she wants to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
she's a solid Democrat.
She is a solid Democrat, but, you know, it was interesting that her race, Utah was, I think, maybe the only state where Democrats did better than they had in the past. And I think a lot of it rests at the campaign that Caroline ran. And I think that not only is she an incredible individual who I've gotten to know, but, you know, she is so, the ethos that she espouses is so natural to Park City. You know, she's a mountaineer. I mean, the things she does on a daily basis, I can't imagine, literally a mountain climber. And I think that's both a literal and a metaphorical thing to describe her. But, you know, we've got a lot of public lands issues that are coming up. We've got a lot of local land issues that you and I have discussed previously. And so I think that she is someone who has an incredible message. She is an incredible messenger, and I look forward to hearing what she has to share.
Okay. And any other speakers that you've got lined up?
Not as of now, but I think it'll be a great evening. Again, the doors open at 6. Program begins at 7, goes to 8:15. It'll be Caroline will help us open up. Adam and I will be there in conversation. And again, you can go to jointheunion.us to get tickets and attend.
All right. Is there a fee for tickets?
No, tickets are free.
All right. I guess I want to ask about this, though, because I guess there are a lot of people who feel like the Trump administration is on the right track, that they are. The administration is taking actions that should have been taken decades ago. And I read on the union website where it says the recent power shift in the House has empowered individuals loyal to divisive agendas rather than the American people. But again, millions of Americans believe that we're finally taking some actions that will save the American people from rampant and illegal immigration, from a crushing federal deficit, inflation, and unaffordable health care. So, what actions are, you know, when you refer to anti-American?
Well, I would say this, is that if you look at the sort of basics of what make up a functioning democratic system, the rule of law, the ability to, you know, have free and fair elections, the idea that you can have a free and open media, the things that we frankly took for granted for a long, long time. And you're right, Donald Trump's election and re-election are an absolute reaction to what I think the American people saw as a government that was, and frankly is, still out of touch with individual Americans. I'm not talking about you and me. I'm not talking about people that are lucky enough to live in a town like Park City, right? I'm talking about otherwise hardworking Americans who feel like, and I think frankly have been left behind for a long, long time. And when left no other option, they said, if you're not going to listen to us, we're going to make you listen. And you know what? If we don't start listening now, right, it's not going to get better. I would also say that there were millions of Americans who stayed home last year because, and again, this is one thing that, look, I spent the last 5 or 10 years on, is being anti-Trump isn't enough. Just saying he's bad isn't enough. The guy's been a public figure for 50 or 60 years. You're right. There are a lot of people, Republicans, independents, and even some Democrats that say at least he does something, right? At least there is action. The only thing I think he's even still close to above water on from a public opinion perspective is immigration. The rest of it, I think, is the chaos and everything else that people knew was likely to come, because it's not like he was normal the first time. It's not like he was going to be normal this time. That's not who he is, nor would he ever be. And so from my perspective, what we have to do now is say, okay, when this time is over, when Donald Trump leaves office, what is the world A, going to look like, and B, what are we going to have to do to repair it? Because exactly to your point, Leslie, it's not as if anybody waved a magic wand, like things were going to go back to the way they were on November 4th, 2024. That's not going to happen. Anybody who tells you that that's where we need to go is either selling you something or has no idea what's going on in the world. And so I think from our perspective, all of this, all of these conversations, all of these meetings is to really understand where it is we need to go, who it is we need to listen to, who are those leaders of tomorrow, right? I mean, we have a lot of people who have done decades of proud service, and we thank them for it, right? But like, we need to figure out, okay, what comes not tomorrow literally, but tomorrow metaphorically, when my kids have graduated from Park City High and have moved on and are making their own lives, what do we want that world to look like?
Okay. Finally, again, that where to register? Then
sure. Yeah, go to jointheunion.us. It's at the Jim Santee Auditorium on Wednesday evening. Doors open at 6. Program begins at 7.
All right. Thanks for spending time with us, Reed.
You bet.
Reed Galen, again, founder of the union. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Summit County has a number of events planned. On the phone with details, I have Summit County Behavioral Health Director Aaron Newman. In the studio with me is the county's newest Mental Wellness Alliance Director, Anna Frashu. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Morning, Leslie.
Aaron, let's start with you. So many of the county health department positions funded by federal grants, as we just heard from Phil Bondurant. I mean, how is the current administration impacting the behavioral health department, if at all?
Well, there are some impacts for it. However, as I reported to council last week, what we're looking at right now is something that we can actually absorb with our current funding from the state of Utah. One of the issues is in Utah, our funding isn't based on need and services, but simply as a formula of our population. Because of that, there's certain services that we rarely utilize, but we receive funding from the state for. So we're able to leverage those. I think at the federal level, the biggest change is the SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Administration, has been disbanded and becoming part of this larger organization. So we're not quite sure what that means yet from DC. And kind of like the rest of the health department, we're waiting till June 30th to really see where things stand.
Yeah. Any idea if the local Medicaid members of Summit County being impacted here?
So all indications at this point in time is that there would be no impact to our Medicaid. And even if there were, we're in a very unique situation here in Summit County because we have such a breadth of mental health nonprofits that even if the worst case scenario was to take place, we have ability to serve our residents here in Summit County.
Okay. Anna, you've just been hired as the county's new Mental Wellness Alliance Director. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I've been in the community for over 8 years now. I've always volunteered serving on multiple boards within our community, from the People's Health Clinic, just wrapping up the Community Foundation as well, Park City Community Foundation Board. So I've been heavily involved in our community for all 8 years. And now I'm just happy to actually make this a job of mine, right? So continuing my work in the community, but now from a mental health perspective.
Yeah, so what are some of your job duties as Mental Wellness Alliance Director?
Yeah, so the job of the Mental Wellness Coordinator is really to be the convener, the facilitator within our community, helping coordinate all of the services that we do have to offer, help identify some of the gaps, and how can we collaboratively work together to identify those needs and come up with solutions. So I've been, since I've started, I've worked closely on doing a listening tour within our community. I'm now at a point where we're pulling out some common themes and taking that back out to the community to probe and ask more questions. And at the end of my opportunity here with Summit County, I do look forward to putting together a new strategic plan. And so that strategic plan will really help guide the vision and the steps we will take as a community when it comes to mental health. Again, this is, I've always said the Mental Health Alliance is a community's alliance. And so the answers, I always have a lot more questions than I do answers, and the answers are really going to come to the community. So this month being Mental Health Awareness Month, we've had a lot of events planned, and we are off to a really good start. And then following this, I will be convening what is the alliance, and we'll have an official kickoff later this summer.
Okay, so tell us about some of the events that you've got planned.
So we had an event on May 6th at the Temple of Har Shalom. I was really excited to see 68 people in attendance there, and that was just a community conversation around mental health where we brought six different nonprofits and service providers together to just talk about the challenges and some successes or solutions that we currently have in the community. On Wednesday of this week, we're going to have a film called Screenagers Under the Influence, and this is going to be at the Summit County Library in Camas. On May 15th, we're going to have a conversation on overcoming mental health challenges in aging. This is going to be at Peace House at 5:30 p.m. Refreshments will be provided. And we're helping promote the telehealth grand opening and health fair on Saturday at Park City Library starting at 2 p.m.
Okay. Is all that on the website?
If you go to the Summit County Health Department website under behavioral health, there is a section for the Mental Wellness Alliance, and you'll see the events for this week. And there's four more leading up to the end of the month.
All right. So, Aaron, is this an idea of kind of bringing back where Connect left off?
It is to an extent. If you remember, back in 2015, a group of residents here in Summit County really brought together multiple stakeholders to address issues of our behavioral health care system. We really had sort of a siloed system, very little coordination. And so the purpose of the alliance was just to bring everyone together, convene everyone, understand what resources we have, and then to work collectively to create a county system of care. And we're so happy to have Anna on board with this. She's already, like you heard her say, she's already out in the community. She's reawakening those voices. And I would tell your listeners, if anyone would like to get involved with the alliance, simply reach out to Anna. And she's more than happy. You don't have to be a clinician. When we looked at the alliance pre-COVID, we had folks from all across the board. I know you're familiar with the Rutans. They still are engaged to an extent with this.
Okay. Has it been a conscious decision to kind of use the words mental wellness? Because we used to hear so much about mental illness.
Yeah, so the alliance is all about not just dealing with the components of the illness, but to be a broader perspective, to really encourage the conversation within our community. Sometimes when you hear the word illness, people kind of clam up and they don't want to really be engaged in something that's finding solutions and, more importantly, supporting those individuals in our community that do have a mental illness. And I think back to some of the successes that we had with the alliance. The clubhouse, the Summit County Clubhouse, continues to grow to where it has three full-time staff and now over 75 active members. That was something that if by addressing the stigma and encouraging people to come over, find out about it, that opened the doors for a lot of people that previously could have been isolated.
Yeah. Again, how do people find out more about what's going on, Anna?
They can visit the Summit County Health Department website. Under the behavioral health section, they'll see a tab that says the Mental Wellness Alliance, and we have all the information, events, and even how to contact me there.
Great. And Aaron, how's the new contract with the Huntsman Mental Health Institute working out?
It's working out really well. Like anything, there's a bit of a transition, but what I really like with this is we've split the contract. So we have a separate Medicaid provider contract with Healthy U Behavioral, and then all of our direct services through Huntsman Mental Health. One of the big things that we've been able to do is increase the coverage cap. So anyone that makes less than $52,000 a year is able to receive free or reduced behavioral health care here in Summit County through our county program provided at Huntsman Mental Health. The other big win we've had has been in our school-based services. We're in every single school, public school and charter school in Summit County. And two things for the first time, we have three psychiatrists providing medication advice and services as needed. And we're able to continue that care through the summer. Previously, when summer break rolled around, school-based services were put on pause. This year, we're able to continue through.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add, Aaron?
I think just the one thing you've heard me talk about is 988. We're in a great spot now where two of the issues previously with that, all cell phone carriers now have access to 988, and then the geolocation is there as well. And for those that aren't aware, 988 is sort of the 911 for someone in a mental health crisis. If you call that, you're sent down to the crisis center run by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute, and they're able to walk you through your situation or dispatch our mobile crisis outreach team.
Okay. And Anna, anything else you wanted to mention?
Just want to say mental wellness is really something that's dear and near to all of our hearts, whether we know someone who has suffered from a mental illness or we ourselves have suffered at some point. I think as a community, it's important for us to all come together. What I love about this topic, it's not one that's divisive. I think it's one that really can build inclusion and unite us as a community. And so I just want to thank everybody for all their support thus far and really encourage everyone to step up, join the Alliance, and or come to one of our events this month as we celebrate Mental Wellness Awareness Month.
Okay, Anna Freshu and Aaron Newman, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.